For April the 21st, 2023, we talk about Murderous Muses, The Last Epoch, Crisis Core, and much more. Welcome to Level 454. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Jala Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jala.
Yeah, I was so surprised. I think it was because I gave Ben so much crap. I was like, you never give up your spot, Ben. And so like when I was like, hey, I want to talk about stuff this week, he's like, I'll give my spot up.
So, oh, that was nice.
You incepted him.
I guess I did.
Oh, so what's going on?
Wait, so she's inside his memories?
Oh, we all live in a house dreams? Of mirrors. Yes.
Well, I got a Steam Deck, fellas. Woo!
Congratulations.
Now I just need
trading card game, right?
Right. Steam Deck? Now I just need to whittle up some time so I can actually play it. I played it very, very little. So unfortunately for the folks who have been asking, like, Jala, give us your thoughts about the Steam Deck, you'll have to wait until I'm done with the current gauntlet of things I'm juggling. Then I will let you know at that point. I have played it very little. Like, honestly, couple of hours maybe is about as much time as I've had on it.
And the only opinion you can have after that amount of time with it is big. It's big.
Yeah. It's big, but it's not like this. Okay, I am currently in the middle of playing Resident Evil 4 Remake like most everybody. And it's not a big enough screen for that. So I'm playing that on Dave's laptop. And so I'm going to be on Tales from the Backlog about that coming up very soon. So I have a deadline. I've got, assignment play. So I don't have time to play like for fun right now.
Yeah.
I'm in Cole's boat. I jumped in.
So. Yeah. I could have warned you off of that.
Well,
No, I know exactly. I know it's the content disease. I get it.
Yeah. Well, and then talking to cool people about cool things. I mean, Adam Bucherri is going to be on there who, did the Enter the Survival Horror and is, friend of everybody. Adam, he's around
friend
somewhere. Oh, he also made a video game. I want to tell you that, too, since,
whatever. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he made a game called Flatline Defense. It is on his bucherri.itch.io.
Neat.
And I have not had a chance to play it because very, very busy, but it's there. So he made a game. You should check it out.
Not going to lie, Bucherri Itch.io sounds like something I would order from Sonic.
If that's the name of something you're ordering, never mind. That's fine.
Oh, gosh. Anything else besides Steam Deck?
No. Really. I mean, unless you want to hear about my headache. Otherwise, no.
I care about that, but also
it doesn't make for good content.
That's the thing. That's just a friend being concerned for a friend.
I'm
going to
throw something interesting.
No, I don't. I literally, we were just talking about, I spent basically the whole past week dealing with taxes and accounting and stuff. I also mowed my lawn. Just did that stuff.
I tried to and couldn't because my mower won't start. So I gotta figure out how to get it out of the shed and close enough to my car to try jumping the battery.
Okay.
And assuming that doesn't kill me in a fireball, I will either mow my lawn or if it fails, I will need to borrow somebody's. So text some friends
just
and be like,
let it
hey, that's what I've been doing. It gets a little rough when you see your neighbor mowing his grass for the second time in the season before you've gotten around to your first.
Right. So. This is why you make friends
in
your neighborhood,
though.
That
sounds like a him
problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is like just ask like, hey, can I borrow, do you mind if I borrow your mower? I'll fill up your gas tank or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's the text that went out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we shall see.
Oh, well, hopefully it's just it just needs a jump. But even then, a riding mower battery, probably. What is it, a rider?
It's,
even?
Yeah, I've got a writer, thank God.
Yeah, yeah. That's like 40 bucks. For the, probably 50 bucks now after supply chain stuff, but...
Yeah, it that won't be the worst. And I got better stuff to talk about, because I went and saw the Dungeons & Dragons movie.
It's a goddamn movie podcast now.
I know! It's as good as everyone says it is!
Yeah.
Yay!
A duet of pleasures, Mario and Dungeons and Dragons.
Mm-hmm. I would watch that crossover.
Yeah. I really, really liked it. And remind me, who has seen it and who has yet to see it?
I have not seen it yet. I need to go.
I need to go see it this weekend because we're talking about it on Adaptation Decay.
I have a goof I want to make, but it would spoil it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I can take my headphones off. Hold on a sec.
No. You're fine. No, Jala. It's a great movie. It's really fun. The thing I want to talk about is what they're going to do for sequels, because this is succeeding well enough that there's going to be sequels. Mm-hmm. And I really hope they don't go back to the same characters.
Yeah, I agree.
That is not a knock on the characters. They are well done. I loved them. Like, it was so much fun spending that time with them. But the nature of Dungeons and Dragons, and like listening to podcasts about it or playing it, is constantly having these new characters to be introduced to. Like, I feel like that's such a part of it, mm-hmm. that it would be doing the movies a disservice to stick with this particular party. Mm-hmm. I would love to see them make cameos. Just like you would around a table, right? Like, mm-hmm. oh, hey, your character from, you know, three runs ago is giving you your next quest or whatever. That's excellent. Wonderful. Do that. I just wonder if they will be bold enough to make that choice.
I mean, it would be hard to imagine them just telling Chris Pine, like, hey, buddy, you know, you done your work. Can you just go sit on the bench for this one? But like, at least, you know, supporting characters, everybody else is nobody. So whatever.
Well, you know, they could also do like what the Conan and Red Sonja movies did in the 80s and have Arnold come back, but now he's Kalidor, Prince Kalidor, instead of Conan.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Do it the classic D&D thing. All the same actors, different characters.
Yeah. Well, then that would be like, you know, it would seem more consistent to like the same players are playing new characters.
Exactly. Yeah. I could see that being done with a wink and a smile for like a skit. I don't know if it could carry a movie, but yeah.
So what I would love to see is them do a Ravenloft campaign.
Mm, yeah, but the
Curse of Strahd.
It'd be real cool, but this is Forgotten Realms is the thing. So hey,
Ravenloft is part of the Forgotten Realms.
It's because Ravenloft can be part of anything. Yeah.
Everybody nuts themselves about Forgotten Realms though. So like, it's got to, they're just going to stick with that. They're going to have to stick with that.
The dam has broken. The Dungeons and Dragons movies are coming. I hate to make this comparison, but Marvel like, they will get to every corner of the universe in time. Just
give me Spelljammer, you cowards.
give me Dark Sun, you assholes.
Yes. Dark Sun for sure. Gosh.
Spelljammer just with less racism.
I want to be a Crythrin. Those are those gigantic mantis people from Dark Sun.
Sure. Yeah. It's a real shame that the most famous character in the Forgotten Realms presents a real, let's say, aesthetic problem to deal with.
Who is this? I'm sorry.
Drizzt.
He's like an edgelord.
Well, but you know, it just if they were going to mine existing content, then that creates a challenge.
But I was really happy that, at least to my knowledge, like the places were out of Forgotten Realms, and you heard, you know, Waterdeep and Neverwinter and Baldur's Keep and Baldur's Gate.
waiting. I'm like, come on, he's got to catch it.
Yeah. You know, those places are referenced from the game, but as far as I know, I don't think any of the characters were like, it's this person.
Yeah.
They really leaned into the idea of like, you know, these are unique to this adventure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a couple of the side things, like the dragon is actually an established character in Forgotten Realms.
Interesting.
Things like that. But yeah, it's mostly kind of secondary.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're seeing, and I hope that they make bold choices in terms of how they build this multiverse.
Build this expanded
universe.
Mm-hmm.
Because every movie has to be that now.
Yeah.
Hopefully they at least do it well.
Everything has to be a franchise with a 5-year plan.
Could be worse. Could be Dragonlance.
I think we can agree on that.
So that's me.
How about you, David?
Not a lot this past weekend. This coming weekend is the local comic book convention.
Ooh, neat.
So yeah. So the big headliner is Shatner is going to be there.
Okay.
Excellent.
Man, he's getting up there, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for him.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, I know there's a bunch of people I don't follow most of the things. Like, there's a bunch of professional wrestlers,
mm-hmm.
Bunch of voice actors, stuff like that. But yeah, you know, it should be fun.
Nice. Are you doing any costume stuff, or are you just going for the fun of it?
I'm probably just going to wear my Ren Faire get up. So I'm probably going to be some form of tabaxi, rogue, or wizard, or some such.
Cool.
Basically just, you know, old-timey clothing and cat ears.
Nice. Yeah, well, I hope you have a good time.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, Des, the tabaxi was adorable, correct?
Oh, absolutely. 100% adorable.
Cool. Sorry, I didn't know if there was going to be follow-up on that. I wanted to leave room.
No, there is a very, very adorable...
We're trying not to spoil anything for you.
Okay, yeah. Okay, all right. I know it'll be sometime this week or this weekend. By the time we convene next, I will have seen it. So,
excellent.
Cool. Well, I think we need to talk about games, and to do that, it needs to be a regular show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you having been away the longest, I will throw it to you now.
Okay, I have no idea from the last time I was on here whether or not I told you that I finished Fire Emblem Fates Birthright, but I did. The end.
Hooray!
I believe you did tell us you wrapped it up.
Great! Yeah. And I already told you that I'm playing Resident Evil 4 Remake, but I'm in the middle. I'm chapter 9 at this particular point as we record, but I will be on podcast about that on Tales from the Backlog next week. Recording next week anyway. I have no idea when it comes out, so look for that podcast sometime. But other stuff I want to talk about, because I do have other stuff I want to talk about. Murderous Muses came out.
Yeah, so, you've been looking forward to this one for a while.
Yeah, and as everybody knows, I interviewed Diavecchi Studios last year, right after they did all of the recording and stuff for that. So they were still putting everything together, editing, doing post, all of that. And so anyway, those folks just released that on April 11th. It is a full motion video murder mystery game, and really? It's available on pretty much every major platform. Rupert Booth is in it, but he is the police detective voice. He's not actually playing like an acted out, like on screen part. He's voice only.
Yeah.
So, but various other familiar faces for folks who have played Dr. Decker, Shapeshifting Detective, and Dark Knights at Poe and Monroe show up. So, you know, definitely take a look at that. They are in new roles. This is no longer in the town of August like the first three games were. This is a new place called Merlehaven. And you play as a night watch person at an art gallery. And the artist, Mordecai Gray, was murdered the night of the show's opening. And the suspects are all subjects who were painted by him. Hence, they are the Murderous Muses.
I've got to laugh because Mordecai Gray is the most I'm going to get murdered in a mystery name ever.
Yeah.
It's like you got a real punchable face. You got a real murderable name.
Yeah. So, yeah. So there is a day and a night cycle at this gallery while you are doing your shifts. So during the day cycle, you hang paintings above their respective descriptive placards, which is when you, you know, like they're just on the wall. The placards are on the wall and you have to basically fit the painting to the correct spot on the wall. And as you do that, if you get the correct combination, like if you hang just a random painting there, it won't do anything. But if you get the right combo, and it's not super hard, you get a button pop up that if you push it has like a narration telling you something about the place or the person or whatever that's in the painting. The subject of the painting is talked about. And so it gives you like flavor text about Merlehaven. So you learn a little bit about that. But really it's during the night cycle that you really start to do all the detective work. So in the night cycle, you end up hanging up the paintings of the six muses above the different descriptive placards in the gallery. But every time you do this with these paintings in particular, it gives you a short video of that muse telling you something about the topic. So if you put, you know, one of the characters above the word desire, then they will tell you something about what their greatest wish is or something. And there's also a wall in this night gallery that has all of the muses listed along with a series of three prompts, which if you happen to watch all of the videos for those prompts, unlocks a police interview with that suspect. And of course the police person is played by Rupert Booth. So, after you've watched a video, the placard will rotate to a different keyword. So some keywords that you need in order to unlock certain interviews may not be immediately available when you roll up on the gallery. The words, are, you know, unlocking different keywords in there, like as it goes. So like if it says desire, but you needed to say Merlehaven, well, when it rotates after you've watched a video, it might pop up with Merlehaven next. You don't know what's going to come up next on the rotations.
Is it random? Is it like a slot machine type
It's
thing?
Randomized. It is randomized.
Huh.
So yeah. That makes it, and also the killer is randomized, so it could be one of six endings, depending upon who killed him. So
this is a mainstay too. Like that's the way it was in Decker. I know that.
Yeah, that's how it is in all of their games. They have multiple endings, and pretty much any of the suspects could be the killer. And it differs play to play, and just like in the other games, you can't really rely on looking at their disposition in the videos because they have the same disposition regardless of whether they are the killer or not. So,
So that guy's got a real murderable name, but the other person doesn't have a real murderer, disposition.
You're going for murderous there, I think.
Murderous.
Well, Mordecai.
Murderal. Murgatroyd.
Mercurial.
Mordecai has given all of the muses reason to hate him. So every single one of them has a legitimate motive. Now, whether or not they actually, you know, killed him is dependent upon your playthrough. So another factor I wanted to mention is that in the main menu of the game, there is something called seed, and you can actually copy that seed and give it to somebody else who can then play in the same version of the gallery that you have played in. So if you want to share that particular experience, you can share that seed information and somebody else can take over and also like play the same, not take over your game, but like play in the same space. With the same.
I wonder if the community will eventually come around on like what the best seed is.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, it'll definitely be like 69-420. Well,
in terms of which combination tells the most satisfying story.
Yeah.
But also which has the best name. Yes.
So the downside about the randomization, about those plaques kind of rotating, you know, and being randomized every single time you go in there, is that you may or may not be able to unlock a police interview depending upon what keywords show up and what order you go in when you're hanging all the paintings up. So that is, you know, something to keep in mind. Once you use a keyword, it is no longer available for another muse. So you might get the same keyword again after using a different placard, though. So, like, you know, you're looking for Merlehaven, and so, like, you find one that says Merlehaven in the entire gallery, but two characters need Merlehaven to be unlocked. You can put one on there and then go about, you know, other stuff in the room and see if you can, you know, find another Merlehaven later. You know, you may or may not get one. So
the gallery navigation has a real aesthetic to it. Like, is that real time walking around, or is that node to node pre-rendered?
That's real time walking around.
Okay. Just in the Steam images, like, it's got a real like Amber Journeys Beyond.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. And I really dig it, because that really works with the FMV style of game because of, you know, its origins and everything.
Period of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the videos that you view in the Night Gallery are, like I said, the same depending on the person, but it doesn't matter who the killer is. They all have the same one. You have what equates to lives or tries associated with each of these paintings. There are these little red glowing gems called the Eyes of Mordecai, which are on the lower left of each muse's portrait. And you can remove these and put them into other paintings for more tries once you have unlocked the police interview for a given suspect. So you can give yourself more tries at, you know, trying to figure everything out that way. You can also put them into a hint line, and by putting six eyes there, you can eliminate a suspect. So that they do have like a help, basically, you know, having trouble trying to figure it out yourself. Mm-hmm. So you do have a total of 3 days to unlock as much as you can, at the end of which you have to accuse a suspect of the murder. And right now I'm currently halfway through my first run. Again, very busy, but I did my... you know, old college try to try to get through the whole game. But unfortunately, I have not yet. It seems like people are getting through in about 7 hours time. So it's not like a super long game or anything like that, but more than one sitting. So,
yeah, that's pretty long. I mean, compared to Decker was like a 4 hour thing for me, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, then again, I don't know if the people who are playing this being super excited FMV fans are like poking around every nook and cranny. Right, you know, like, I don't know what their play style is like. Are they like, you know, jetting, or are they whatever? Like, I don't know. So I will give you my play clock whenever I'm done, so you can tell, you know, by my wandering style what that's like. But that'll be like in a follow up episode. So
nice.
Any questions about Murderous Muses?
No, I love the fact that this art gallery, the most qualified person to like take care of the paintings and stuff is the random night watchman.
I know, because like me being a painter, having been gallery represented, I'm just like, ooh, I would never ever want just like rando security guard guy trying to put up those paintings. But
it would be kind of funny if they justified it like, you actually have a degree in like art, but this was the only job you could get or something.
Economy's rough.
Well, and then what else is kind of funny too, is there's a character named Lilith who's one of the muses, and she is a mortician or a funeral director or something like that. And as I've mentioned previously, I have an episode on death positivity coming up on, April 28th. So next week, after the release of this show. And part of the thing that's funny about this is that Lilith, the character in the game, is talking about green burial and compostable coffins and stuff. And that's like some of the stuff that,
that stuff's creepy as fuck.
Well, that stuff is kind of some of the stuff that we talk about in the, you know, like environmental portion of the death positivity episode, which is very funny.
Sounds like you have a podcast episode to listen to, David.
It's very funny, because then you get to hear Cameron from Monster Dear Monster, who popped on that episode, talk about when he was studying forensics and ended up slipping on some ethanol or something on the floor and then face planting right into somebody's grandma's chest cavity. So anyway, like there's a lot of wild stories on there. So anyway, that's coming out soon. So anyway, that's a total side note. Let me continue talking about video games now.
I don't think I can think about anything else now.
Okay, well, sorry about that. All right, Dark Side of the Moon is another FMV game. This one is by Tayana Studios, released in 2021. This was part of my research for the interview with Rupert Booth, which comes out on May 12th. Anyway, you play as Dean Hamilton, a single father who has two children who disappear in the middle of the night, and the police detective, Rupert Booth, seems to suspect that Dean himself is related to this disappearance, but then you later find out that he's an evil alien, so Rupert gets to play a villain. It is great. So he turns it up to 11. It is very fun to watch. Anyway, things go very, very off the rails from there, as you might imagine, because there's like aliens involved and so on. So it's pretty well bonkers.
Yeah.
But mechanically, it has some dialogue choices to make, as well as some point and click adventure elements inclusive of an inventory. And you do have a phone that you can mess with and call people and things like that. So it is light on gaming requirements, but it does have some interactions. You also kind of have like a hub, like you have like an open map that you can go and pick where you want to go, which unfortunately means that sometimes stuff isn't signposted well. And then you are wandering around trying to figure out, trying to figure out where to go. So that's one of its downfalls. The game was also troubled with some programming bugs, but the studio has been working on it regularly over the past 2 years to fix it. So like, I think they released another update in February of this year. So they're still working on it. A lot of reviews ding it for those, bugs that I mentioned, and also for the varied skill of the different actors. So they've got like Rupert Booth and, some other folks on there that are really good. And then they have other folks that are like, this guy just seems to have rolled up off the street.
Yeah, you know? Community theater kind of stuff.
Yeah. So the pacing for me is a bit jerky, where I'd imagine like a father would have a pretty tense time looking for his kids, you know?
Yeah.
So like the pacing doesn't match like the actual things that are going on in the story sometimes.
I mean, maybe he just didn't like his kids very much.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the police detective's angle. Anyway, there's also times where it's not clear, like I said, where you're supposed to go. So that's a problem. You can't like fast travel point to point. You have to like click and walk. So, and watch the video. And you can skip the little videos of you know, traveling and things like that. But still, I mean, it's extra clicking.
And friction. Yeah.
Yeah. So it does have some interesting elements to it. But I will fully admit I was there because I was doing research. So, and I enjoyed it for Rupert's role in it and also for a couple of the other folks. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag, let's say.
Going with the right expectations.
And then too, like, I feel like if this studio does another title hereafter, like that might be something to watch, because it, for a first effort, it is very good compared to lots of other FMV mystery games and things. It is not as good. So, you know, just keep that in mind.
A classic for fans of the genre kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. So the last thing that I played was on my Steam Deck. I played Aperture Desk Job. All it is a 30-minute spinoff of Portal that was released last year by Valve to serve as a tech demo for the Steam Deck's controller functions. That's all it is. You play as a product inspection person at Aperture, overseen by a core named Grady, who has some wild ideas for how to make a turlet into a turret. Because he has an accent. He sounds Southern, so they made him say toilet as turlet.
Of course.
And
that's how people from the South talk. Yeah,
apparently. And you basically have an accident one day where you end up causing some ammo to fly into the toilet, which then gets spat out. And so then he had the brilliant idea to make a turret out of it.
Okay.
And so like you even have like a short period of time in which you are having to fight off other turlet prototypes on your way up to see Cave Johnson to pitch your brilliant new invention.
Okay.
So anyway, it's very short and cute and makes me really miss Portal. So like maybe one of the first things I play on the Steam Deck will be going back and playing Portal again.
It'd be a good fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I didn't realize that there was like combat in that.
It's not really like it just.
Okay.
It's not like combat. It's you're like in a fixed location, and you just got to shoot the little guys as they go by on little conveyor belts. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not intense. It's a tech demo. Mm-hmm. So.
Huh. Yeah. No, I am actually kind of shocked that I haven't played that. It didn't like surface itself on the device when I got it. You know. It kind of out of sight, out of mind kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, lots of FMV stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the primary stuff I have to talk about today.
Little Portal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I had that glut of games last week, so I can round that out. Mm-hmm. And then I've got some ranting to do. We'll start with the good. At the urging of a friend who, like me, likes ARPGs and Diablo vibes, but does not like Blizzard, I picked up a game called Last Epoch. Okay. And this is a Diablo-like.
It looks really good.
It is so good. Yeah, so it pulls, like, it is a Diablo-ass Diablo game. Right down to the font. but the skill tree and ways they give you options for building your character goes beyond what I have experienced in Diablo. And I think we talked a little bit last week about, like, I don't know that I'm the right person to talk about the nuances of Diablo's system. Mm-hmm. But man, have I had fun digging into the nuances of Last Epoch. So it is an early access game. It is an interesting story where there's kind of a multiverse thing going on, a threat to the multiverse, destroying all worlds. And you happen to be the person that can pull together shards of the epoch and travel across time to help save the multiverse. And the way that plays out is that the kind of overworld map where you select your locations throughout the game, not only has different locations, but it has different time periods that you can move back and forth between. And so when you're choosing where to go, you are also then choosing when to go. Mm. And the kind of things and locations, et cetera, available to you are different based on when you go there. It's a really cool idea. The way it mostly plays out is, like, there will be something you can't get or something somewhere you can't go in one time, and you go through a time portal to another time and, you know, kind of circumvent that and then go back to the time you were in.
Right.
They're still building out the story for the game. So I expect them to do more interesting stuff like that. Right now, the story just kind of ends. Or cuts off, I should say. It doesn't end.
Okay.
It's just kind of like, okay, that's as far as we've gotten. Thanks. So, you know, they're very in development. But yeah, kind of a cool setting. And it's a setting where you kind of get to fight more than just demons. I've fought velociraptors, y'all, and it was glorious.
Oh. Yay!
So yeah.
Wait, so does that mean, are there like plus one velociraptors of, I don't know.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All the prefixes toothy. And suffixes and yep. Yeah. It's got all that going on. Gear is less set dependent, at least as far as I've seen. And there is a pretty in-depth crafting system where once you get a piece of gear, you can either break it down for parts or re-roll individual parts or upgrade individual parts, all around kind of getting the stats to where you want them. And you're going to want to do that because there is so much leeway for how you build your characters.
Okay.
So, the system for classes, there are 5 classes in Last Epoch, but there are really 15. So you start out, there's 5 classes you can choose from, but then in the 4th chapter of the story, you get the option to specialize into 1 of 3 masteries for each of the classes. And it is wildly different depending on what you choose. So for example, my solo character, I started out as a rogue. And from there I could have gone, marksman, which is very bow focused, or I forget what it's called, but it's like Umbral Blades, which is like sneaky stabby
assassin.
Assassin. Then there's one more. Some of the classes don't have their third archetype finished yet, so that's not out yet. And the kind of updates, they add those as they go. That changes the way you play and gives you this really interesting on-ramp of like, okay, I'm kind of learning the ins and outs and in kind of the base skills of this character. And then based on what I like in this trial period, now I'll specialize towards that thing, that I liked the most. Mm-hmm. However, you can always, switch up masteries. It's very generous in letting you respec, both skills, which you can just kind of swap out, at your heart's desire. And the kind of point trees within each skill, which is where the meat of the character building and the fun is, in my estimation.
So they give you like a Path of Exile, obviously not to that degree, but like a skill tree, like a board kind of thing almost.
Mm-hmm. Each skill has a tree. And so Path of Exile, I think if I remember correctly, your entire level up is traveling through these nodes. And it's just massive.
Path of Exile is the board. Everything else is incidental to that.
Yeah, exactly. And so this feels like a very happy medium between Diablo's kind of like, here's a few options, but really this is what you want to do. And then Path of Exile's like, you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Have you last only played kind of Diablo since 3?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, which again, that's where my impressions are coming from. And I really like the balance. So each skill, if you specialize it, allows you to have then a whole tree of options for how you upgrade that skill. And I've been really impressed that every upgrade feels like very impactful. So rather than just plus X percent to this, or, you know, a little bit more damage here, it really is things like, okay, well now this inflicts bleed, or now this inflicts poison, or, you know, suddenly this AOE thing is all directed at one target, or the, you know, there's a lot of crazy ways you can change and customize the skills. And the tree you kind of start at the center of, and it branches out. And you're not locked into going one direction or another. You can kind of go halfway down one side, halfway down another, which allows you to mix and match how your skills come together in some really cool ways. An example is I have on that rogue again in the marksman tree, there is a puncture skill that is a, you know, a piercing shot that has a chance to inflict bleed. And you can upgrade it so that a couple different ways. One of the ways kind of focuses on poison. So if you're going more of a poison build, you can, make it inflict poison instead of bleed. But you can also make it so that when you open up with that attack, it gives all of your follow-up attacks a chance to inflict bleed as well. Then I go and grab another skill, which is a detonating arrow, which again starts out as this like, oh, it's an AOE attack. You hit someone with an arrow, then it explodes.
Mm-hmm.
But you can upgrade it so the explosion is like shock lightning tendrils that go out.
Mm-hmm.
And the arrow hit, the explosion, and the tendrils each count as a hit. And so if you give everything a chance to inflict bleed with your first attack,
yeah,
and then have a second attack that has just a ton of hits to it, every hit stacks bleed and enemies just start disappearing real fast.
You're finding those monster train synergies. Yeah.
It's so much fun. And again, if I wanted to completely change what I was doing and specialize in a whole new skill, as you level up, your minimum points in each skill grows and grows. So even when you reset, you don't reset back to zero, and then you gain back your points really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a ton of freedom. The final thing that I'm like right on the cusp of doing with this archer, or excuse me, with the marksman, is all those poison skills that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Well, you can grab a skill in another section of the tree that converts all poison chance to bleed chance.
Okay.
And so suddenly I'm taking all these kind of things that were meant to do poison, and suddenly that's just more bleed chance and kind of leaning even harder into that. So it's fun to look for those opportunities between different skills and in different places in the trees. And that's a ton of fun.
Yeah.
So, I've got that. I have a sentinel. It's like a paladin type of person that I am running around with a spear that I lunge with. But then I have upgraded it so that every time you lunge with the spear at the end of the lunge, you also throw it. And both of those things create like a damage over time trail, you know, behind you and ahead of you to delete people with. So it's, yeah, it's just fun, crazy stuff. And exciting to be in the game as they're still, putting out content for it. It feels like it has a future. Like whereas Grim Dawn, I had mentioned a while ago, is like a Diablo alternative that I was interested in. Grim Dawn is done. You know, they're not making anything new for that. So it's cool to be in Last Epoch and kind of be with the game as it feels like there's a ton of content on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's, nice. That's Last Epoch.
I had never, ever heard of this.
Yeah, me neither. I, had a friend basically bully me into getting it. and this was a selling point for them. They said it is the perfect Steam Deck game.
Mm.
So just saying, just going to leave that out there.
That's weird. I'm trying to think of, you know, I've never played one of the, like a Diablo, like on a console. I know they've done that since Diablo 3. Like apparently it works really well on there. I cannot picture playing one of those without a mouse.
Yeah, it's it is built to accommodate controller really well.
Yeah.
I will say, because I'm at my computer anyway, when I get into navigating menus, it is easier for me to just grab the mouse and click around.
Yeah.
But again, the friend that got me into it plays on Steam Deck and loves it as like the perfect game for that kind of session.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that is the good. Now we're gonna get into the bad
thing. Now we're gonna pull out the salt shaker.
And it is going to be all the more salty because this is something that I have been so sweet on for months now.
You've made it sound really good.
It is really good. Why did they have to go fuck it up? I'm talking about DMZ and specifically their season 3 release. And so I want to be specific.
Bills do. Yeah.
Bills do. It was an Activision game. We knew it was only a matter of time. Somewhere deep down, I knew. Season 3 is really freaking cool on paper. Like everything they announced about what they were doing with the third season ahead of time was phenomenal. Like you can now find like crafting recipes in games so that there's alternate ways than just money to get the equipment you need. That's fantastic. There is specialized gear that you can start to get that will give you additional bonus perks and all this stuff. There is new mission types. There is a new boss. Like it's all so cool. And then they dropped something the day of release that was nowhere in their promo materials because they knew it was shitty. They knew exactly what they were doing and they didn't want to, you know, get the backlash ahead of time. They released they have released one and will be releasing more pay to win skins.
Okay. So how can a skin be pay to win?
Yeah. So, and this is not just, oh, well, this skin has better camouflage. The skins come with DMZ specific perks. And the entire gameplay loop of DMZ is you drop in with nothing and you get kitted out. And as long as you exfil, you can keep that equipment, and do more and more, you know, difficult things because your equipment is better and better as you build it up. What they've done is sell skins that will always come equipped with key items, even if you died on your last exfil.
And key items being very, very key items.
Extremely. So the one that came out first was a medium backpack, which is like two extra storage slots. Like,
yeah, that's fairly irrelevant.
That's fine, whatever. It sets a bad precedent about selling things that have a game impact instead of just a cosmetic impact.
Mm-hmm.
But then data miners found like the next three skins that they're planning to release. And it's terrible. The first one is two plate armor, which is a big leg up over what you spawn in with. The next skin is a self revive. Which I know for so David, you had said something about solo players.
Oh,
really
for solo play, it's almost essential. Basically, you're not playing until you get a self revive. You're just trying to get a self revive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Because if you go down, you don't have teammates to bring you back playing solo, and so self revive is your only option to keep going. But what that does is it shortcuts an entire section of the gameplay loop.
Yeah, so you can start going out and doing your objectives and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now you can just pay to always have that, which just does not
Ingrid, sit with me. I'm of the person, and I'm probably a minority, but I think you just should spawn with that always, at least if you're solo.
Yeah,
but everybody should. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And also just like, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But even then, I think it, so, you know, any time you spawn in, you might spawn in with teams that X-filled their previous mission and have gear already. Right. So you were already spawning in with people that already had a medium backpack or already had two plate or self reviver or whatever. So it's not that they have those advantages within a single drop. Is that now people who pay get to cut off that entire you need to drop to get that part of the gameplay loop, which depending on the piece of equipment and the decisions you make, that could, you know, cut an entire drop off the loop, allowing them to just massively shortcut it. Like it feels very similar to like, hey, we're going to sell a car livery in F1 that will always have you starting first on the grid.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, you know, other people in qualifying theoretically could start first on the grid, and starting first on the grid is not a guarantee that you're going to win the race. But over an extended period of time, that is a massive unfair advantage.
Right.
So we haven't talked about the last and most egregious one, which, you know, it's a self-revive. I could understand for solo players, a squad spawning in with all self-revives is obnoxious. Like that's not cool. Then the final thing was a UAV, which is a kill streak that allows you to see on the map everyone that's around, both bots and players. And UAV delineates on what is a bot and what is a player.
Ugh.
That is a massive advantage, especially right at the beginning of the game.
Right. So you can just go in a place where all you're going to be up against is bots.
Uh-huh. Or worse, you can go and rush other teams right at spawn and basically be inescapable.
Yeah, baby turtles.
And yeah, that,
with,
yes.
With your, you know, self-revive.
Yeah. But what, I mean, what's going to happen is you'll have one player on a team. Well, you'll have a couple things. You have everyone on a squad spawning in with the UAVs, and then they can basically keep them up long enough to find anyone. And it's just like, you're going to have to fight if you spawn near that team. There's no getting away from them. And that's just going to be like game breaking. That's just going to be obnoxious as hell. And then the other thing is like, you know, previously the tension was, okay, you can use that UAV, but then, you know, you're going to have to find another one before you get it again. Now this is like, hey, I've got it every drop. And so even if I'm hyper aggressive and that backfires and somehow I lose, I can just do the same thing again because I've got the tools to find people. And completely changes how you play the start of the gameplay loop.
Especially since like PvP can really ruin the game, honestly. Like mm-hmm. the game, you know, just like the cycle, this is not a game that is benefits from that. This is a game where PvP only works if it's the exception, not the rule, I guess.
Is it ever is it ever directly incentivized? Like one of the missions you get is go and kill these other people, or is it just through people being on the board and competing for those resources, PvP is going to break out?
Yeah, there is a hunt squad mission.
Gotcha. Okay,
but there's, you know, there's only so many of those on the map, and then there are people who just, you know, Warzone is the overt PvP mode. And there's people who wash out of Warzone and need to go play PvP on a map where most people aren't trying to PvP, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And those people are getting greatly empowered now.
Has this impacted play? Like, have you noticed this being a problem in practice? Or is this something where even just the potential makes you less likely to go in and play it?
Yeah, it took me several days to actually open up the game. I was so freaking mad.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I want to be able to talk about season 3 because these are really cool ideas and changes in our the kind of new things apart from pay to win skins that they introduced with season three are exactly the direction I think the game should go. I opened it up, I played two drops, and I was just like, I didn't see anyone explicitly that had the pay to win skins.
Mm-hmm.
The vibe is bad now.
That's even worse, because then for all intents and purposes, what that means is that everyone has them.
Right.
Like, you know, like if you don't know that that's why you lost, then, you know, there's always the feeling that, well, you know, yeah, I lose because of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even like, so PvP, that's just a massively bad decision. For the overall gameplay loop, it gives players a shortcut that is massively unfair. And then even for specifically PvE players, I think the UAV is a bad idea. One of the most tense and exciting parts of the game is getting to exfil, right? When you decide you want to leave and you can only do that at 3 points across the map. And you know, there's a high chance that other players are there, either that they just happen to be there or that they're explicitly there camping exfil for easy kills or whatever. That's tense. And now at the end of the match, if you always have a UAV and will get it again at the beginning of your next drop, if you use it, there's no tension. You just, I'll just pop UAV. I can see if anyone's around. And now I know 100% that I'm safe or not.
Yeah.
And that just robs the game of like its climax, essentially. Like, what are you doing?
What was the UAV not in this mode before?
It was, you could find it, but if you popped it to feel safe for that exfil, you didn't have it for your next drop.
Gotcha.
Now you can, it's the end of the match and you've still got it. Pop it, you're going to get it right back.
Yeah.
Right. Also, previously, like, enemies could drop a immediate use, basically like a pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain objectives that would like give you it for like a minute or two.
Yeah. So I hope, like, there's you know, news articles on it. The fan base is very vocally outraged, at least in the circles I'm in. I hope that it's something that will be addressed and they will nerf pay to win, I guess. I don't know how you backtrack out of it, because there's people that have paid money for this shit now. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of stuck in there.
I mean, you just close it down and write it off on your taxes.
Yeah, right. but I am very angry at DMZ, and I'm hurt because we were so close before.
Yeah.
Time to find the next thing, I guess. I'll play more Last Epoch.
I mean, just like, based on the way that you've been speaking about these past few months, it sounded like the best thing they had going for them was this goodwill and kind of like, you know, just a different kind of approach to multiplayer that even people just naturally fell into by the incentive structure around it, and to just kind of like not know what they have, you know, seemingly not know what they have by throwing this in and spoiling it is kind of a, you know, seems like a dumb move.
I mean, yeah, it ruined something that was really special. With the cycle, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Items that incentivize "fuck you, got mine" play is not going to make anyone happy.
Well, people who get theirs.
I guess they won't be happy. They won't be happy in the long run. They know what they did.
they won't see the gates of heaven.
See, I would be fine
with this.
Shower
at night and it won't come out.
I would be fine with this if I could know who these people were. Like, if as I was walking through life, I knew who these people were, that would be worth it.
Yeah. All right. No. So that is me. Some high highs, some low lows this week.
Well, that's a bummer. Mm. David, how about you?
So I actually don't have a whole heck of a lot. I will soon be uninstalling Call of Duty, so that, you know, that's something.
Free up some space. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So I'm sorry. This has been a week. It's like, what have I been doing this week? Probably the biggest thing is I actually fell back into the No Man's Sky rabbit hole.
They just put out a big content pack, right?
Well, this is where this story gets a little funny.
Okay.
The answer is yes. They released a new content pack and released a new expedition, which is like their time limit thing, time limit challenge run with special rewards. Okay. However, not recent enough that the expedition hasn't ended yet.
Okay.
However, if you have it downloaded and you turn off your internet connection and change your system clock back to when it is active, you can still play it.
Okay.
So that is what I'm doing.
And isn't that like kind of diegetic with the game's lore?
Yes, it is. Yeah, so the gimmick here is that so for a bunch of the resources in the game, you can either spend basic resources For a lot of the gear in the game, you can either spend basic resources to refill them, or you can spend craftable items. So it's things like to refill your oxygen, you can either just straight up spend oxygen, or there's like you can craft life support packs. And in the normal game, that just mainly has an advantage in terms of like conserving space and things like that.
Yeah.
In this version, you can pretty much only refill at least your life support, maybe some of the others, with these crafted items. And then also you can only craft items at your base, at one of the bases you establish. And then bases cost a lot more.
Okay.
And all of the objectives, there's each expedition, there's five tiers of objective you have to complete. And each of these basically revolves around going to one of the planets in the solar system where this takes place, building a base, and then, like, you know, working out from that and doing things. So it's, I don't know, I guess, you know, this much more, I guess, almost survival or roguelike type of element to it, because, you know, if you, you know, are going out to complete some objective, you have to make sure you bring enough resources with you because you can't craft them once you're there.
Right.
So that's a lot of fun. They've done a number of these. They actually did one that was straight up like a permadeath roguelike one. They did one that was based on just staying on a single planet and building a bunch of stuff, like all sorts of stuff, but it's a lot of fun.
Just doing all the combinations that are available to them.
Right, exactly. And, there's a storyline. This time, you basically wake up and you are a settler for the Utopia Project that is, you know, some sort of, I don't know, project that sent you out to this, solar system to establish civilization. But, like, everything you're finding is just broken down and, overrun with hostile aliens and things like that. So you're also kind of figuring out what's going on.
Okay.
That's a lot of fun. I mean, other than that, let's see here. Yeah, I think that's about it, honestly. It's been kind of a slow week.
That is a okay.
All you've played is a sim of the entire universe? Gosh.
I did some Tiny Tina's Wonderlands.
Well, we tried. What I didn't realize is David was already at level 12, so my little level 1 character, basically David spent the entire time fishing me out of the gutter.
The game is much more than I would have expected, not particularly supportive of that gameplay.
It's an RPG-ass RPG, man. You gotta be leveled.
I guess so. Which is funny because it starts the game with the idea that you are this like underleveled noob that's being brought into a game. You know, you start out, your character is literally all just gray colored because, oh, you haven't had time to paint your miniature yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah.
I'm significantly better leveled up with that character now. So
okay, next time. So we're going to have to give it another go. You're going with the Berserker?
Yes. Barbarian plus frost damage, baby.
Woohoo.
Nice. And my final one here, not final one, my only one. I'll round things out.
The only one he's going to play. He's done with video games.
It is your final one, then if it's your only one. You know.
Yeah. Well, I haven't finished it yet, but I'm real close to the end. Crisis Core, Final Fantasy VII. I am nearing the end. I'm like two chapters away from it. It's gotten a little bit better. Like my mechanical. What?
I'm sorry. Just like that is kind of damning by faint praise. It's gotten a little bit better, guys.
I mean, it's worth saying. Like, I don't know. The thing I'm wrestling with, you know, especially as we sit here now, kind of in this, golden age. I'm just going to say that. Like, people can say, like, how good of a trend it is. But, like, remakes are kind of popping off right now. Mm-hmm. You know, Dead Space, RE4, on down the line. This is a very strange product because it's not really strange. It's pretty straightforward. It's a bad remake of a very outdated game. And it raises the question of like, was this worth updating and bringing forward? I would say like, yeah, probably because it's a pretty important part of that story in a franchise that people really love.
In a franchise where the story doesn't matter because they're all in different timelines?
Well, I mean, series, Final Fantasy VII and the related works kind of within there. Yeah, so series within a series, yeah. And having it just be on the PSP to where if you wanted to play it, you had to know how to pirate it. It's better for this to be around and available, but then it asks like, okay, is a straight remake enough? No, because taking it off of the PSP and putting it onto, you know, even handheld consoles today give you lots of console experiences, right?
I've got to say, when you say like it's better for it to be around, when the argument you're making is the same argument for made for hard drugs.
I'd rather them be available and regulated. We don't have to get into
it. It's better that they be available. Otherwise, people will have to get them illegally.
I can empathize with the idea of like, hey, no more straight remakes. Let's do remasters.
Yeah, yeah. And so
let's make sure the old ones are available, but let's do remasters.
Right.
See, I thought Final Fantasy VII was a super remaster. Like I thought
Final Fantasy VII was. Crisis Core, no.
Oh, is that different?
Yeah, this is the prequel.
There was a prequel?
Yeah, that they made for the PSP. Yeah.
I played
it was some very of obscure as we are seeing.
Yeah. I played some of it. I didn't get very far into it.
It makes a very bad case for itself at the start. I would say even like the first half of it, where you are dealing with just, oh, it's another Sephiroth. It's another Sephiroth that nobody talks about.
I mean, technically there are 12 of them.
I don't even know if they, there's a sub Sephiroth who's kind of working for him, whose name is literally Angeal.
Assistant to the Sephiroth?
Yeah. he's the district Sephiroth. Sephiroth is the regional Sephiroth. So this is the, like, the, you know, the remastering, up-res of the PSP prequel. You're playing as the guy that Cloud thinks that he is for the first part of Final Fantasy VII, you know? Spoilers for a 2-decade-old game.
So like someone with personality?
Yeah, yeah. And you remember last week I was talking about like he's a puppy dog with a perfectly smooth brain who talks in Sonic's voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feel better than Cloud.
Yeah, but the game is kind of like bisected where you kind of deal with the extraneous, you know, sub Sephiroths, and then you get into the things that are very explicitly the prequel to the events that you care about, kind of coming to this, and then it gets, you know, it's a product that exists more in conversation with the game that it's a prequel to. Right. And now I'm at the point where it's near the end, but like we're doing it, like we're going to Nibelheim to investigate the reactor that's offline. This is where Sephiroth like learns what he is and goes crazy and, you know, burns the town down, or so Cloud thinks, you know, like it's big dramatic stuff that we're kind of going into. And the combat changes as well, because you actually get the Buster Sword about halfway through, and you know, like it unlocks a different way of fighting, which is pretty cool. And the difficulty curve reaches a point where, you know, the simplicity that you had been seeing before is not necessarily working against you. Basically, it finds its groove about halfway through, and it's not a long game. I think I've got about like 10 hours into it so far, with maybe like 2 hours more to go. And that's doing like a minimum of side stuff. There's probably more if you like want to go and do it. But like that problem that I had of, you know, this very much is kind of designed for commutes. So the every playable thing is hallway fight, hallway fight, hallway boss fight, hallway, hallway, cutscene, hallway, boss kind of thing. It's still really simple. In an ideal world, they would have done more with the remake. They would have taken the story and gone and kind of made a more, let's say, like fleshed out experience. This is very much of the style of just a straight pipe. We're making this look like a relatively modern game, even though it is, you know, kind of ugly and the animations are jank. It's obviously like done on a budget kind of thing. And yeah, that is a weird value proposition, you know, to look at, especially when this is existing alongside the Final Fantasy VII remake, and you know, the sequel to that that's coming out later on this year, I believe, which are, you know, kind of much more rethought out games that, you know, do feel modern.
This is like the Steam release of a mobile game.
Kinda, little bit. It's good on the Steam Deck.
That is going to be the final criteria on every game ever for the rest of time now.
Lord.
Yeah. Well, what made you bounce off of it, Jala?
Just
time stuff, or
I just said it wasn't catching my attention too much. I'm like, shrug. I mean, it's fine. But it's fine does not like
that's not sufficient.
No,
doesn't
I still
cut it these days.
I still have like Octopath Traveler 2 and so many other games like in my backlog just piling up, and it's like,
yeah,
you know, should I play this one, or should I go play something else that I'm excited about, you know?
Is Final Fantasy 7 like the actual original one, was that ever re-released?
It got a huge remaster in 2020. Oh, yeah.
Not the remaster, but I mean the actual. The reason I ask is, I remember
did it ever
that
get a straight re-release?
I played it way back in the day and remember it being like one of the worst games I've ever played, which I feel like I must have been missing something. So I really want to go back and like see, like, because like I had played no JRPGs at that point. Like, was I just not engaging with it right?
Yeah. I remember you had it on PC, and when you tried to play it, there was a problem with Windows and it displayed all of the cutscenes upside down.
Yes. That was a thing.
That's wild, because I also played it on PC back in the day and I never had that problem. So I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. let me see here. Yeah, they did do a straight up just here's the original game, you know, with some mild like up-res kind of things going on. And it's only like it's like a $12 game. If you buy it there, that might be worth the trip down memory lane. I mean,
just
for an 80-hour game.
I mean, but like I said, a trip down memory lane, you can disengage, like literally just to find out if now that you know more about JRPGs, like, is this going to land as opposed to making it your first one?
Yeah, just be interested to see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like, I know, like, it's interesting to see how stories seem different, after you're a little older.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things, too. Like, a little bit more here. Like, Final Fantasy VII is a very messy game story-wise. But, like, I don't know. It deals with some really interesting themes that just the translation did not necessarily serve it very well to kind of bring those forward. That and also just, I don't know, like it had like edges sanded off. But when you read about like the creation process and what inspired it, Hironobu Sakaguchi, his mom had died, during the development, and that kind of made it take a little bit of the tone, especially compared to, you know, some of the previous ones, take a more drastic shift. Like he, you know, you're just reading about like pollution and basically how fucked the earth was even back in the mid 90s, you know, like putting all that stuff in there. Like, it's one of those games where when you're playing it in the original, there's a basis for finding all of those cool things there, but you are going to be rounding up by bringing your own, you know, kind of, experience and kind of own themes to it and things like that to where it feels like a pretty genuine and heartfelt work. And I think something that happened that is absolutely the case, is it was such a huge success. And just the shifting nature of creative teams, you know, made it so that the person who, you know, kind of advocated for keeping that weird, messy roughness in there moved on. And then they had to start expanding the universe and start making derivative works off of it. You're just kind of not seeing, you know, in any of the other things, like the Advent Children especially, but even, you know, Crisis Core, like they've got really good blocks there, they just don't decide to do interesting things with it, right? Like, it makes no sense that your main character Zach is as enthusiastic about being a soldier in this as he is, and there's like some, you know, lip service paid to like, what does this even mean, why am I doing this kind of thing, but it just kind of comes across as a bit of like a shonen angst kind of deal. And it's like, man, like, it's like they don't see what's the cool things about the setting that they have, and instead are like emphasizing the wrong things and glossing over the stuff that could be real cool. And so I just think that as it got even more commercial, because Final Fantasy VII was already a very commercial product, you get into these derivative works and kind of that, a lot of that original feeling goes away. Something like the corporate government that rules the world with an iron fist and, you know, makes all of its money off of extractive colonialism kind of stuff, like that is there, but it does not engage with them in a way that I would like for them to, you know?
Yeah. And it's almost like, well, the original game covers a lot of that so well and with such heart. However, you know, these next games don't want to retread ground, so they try to go find something else to talk about, even if that's still a worthy thing to talk about. You know, they're trying to stake their own claim and they gravitate towards the easiest, shiniest stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, people traditionally love the Final Fantasy remakes, though. Like, everyone loved Lightning Reborn.
That wasn't a remake. That was just a straight sequel.
That was Defilement.
Sorry, that's what I meant by remake.
Oh yeah.
Like, I feel like the best thing the Final Fantasy series has going for it is the fact that they don't do many sequels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what the D&D movie needs to do.
Yeah, no, anthology.
Come on,
make it an anthology with loose themes. Come on. Hey David, you're sounding kind of quiet, like you backed off the mic.
Sorry, I'm
No worries.
I'm just lounging back like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Well, I give you my hot Final Fantasy takes. We're so cool, guys.
So yeah, it's a, you know, I'm going to finish it probably tonight or tomorrow. It's been a fun little, fun little diversion. Something that happens with games that I play for fun is a lot of the time it's like, oh, do I want to play that now? Or like, do I want to play that now and possibly end up needing to like replay it in 2 years?
Oh man.
For Watch Out for Fireballs. It's a genuine thing. Like, yeah, there are a lot didn't play Pentiment, because I knew like, oh yeah, we're absolutely going to be, that's absolutely the kind of game we would cover on Watch Out for Fireballs. Mm-hmm. So like, I end up kind of gravitating a little bit toward games that I know that Gary wouldn't play with your hands, you know? So yeah, it's, you know, it just, I'm going over and kind of playing stuff that has no chance of making it onto WoW.
Yeah.
Any questions about Crisis Core?
No.
Oh, cool.
All right. Well, that's the grind.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I'm looking for some shipping labels today. I'm asking people about their favorite couples in gaming. Now, I didn't require it to be romantic couples. You could do like a family duo or best buds or whatever. But, you know, what are your favorite couples in gaming?
Yeah. Who's this? I recognize Aloy.
Yeah. This is Aloy and Erend, who I took a risk posting this because I haven't played the second game.
Oh, Forbidden West.
So if either of them goes with another, love interest or any one of a number of things, then this image is firmly in the fanon or headcanon space.
Yeah.
But as of playing the first game, spoilers, that'll be my answer.
Yeah.
I love the fact that in this, that's the best things coming to. There are three people in this.
Let's see here. Callum writes, I don't know about the greatest, but I do prefer Cloud and Tifa in Final Fantasy VII to Cloud and Aerith. Well, that's because you're a thinking human being. You have eyes and ears.
Also, like, the alternative would be kind of, you know, necro-y.
No.
All right, banned word here. Necro-y. No more necro-y.
Look, someone had to say it. No.
Jala, what does Peter say?
Peter says, for the longest time, I always liked Jaster and Kisala from Rogue Legacy. For the longest time, I'd argue that they would be a great couple, especially given that they're is never anything that actively happens. Some things are implied by the end of the game, which is why we need a sequel, dang it. However, this might sound completely illogical and silly. My official answer is ONS, Ornstein, and Smog. They are a boss fight that even some really, really good Dark Souls players have fits with from time to time. Unless you're Lobos Jr., in which case he eats Ornstein and Smog for breakfast.
That's funny because Ornstein and Smog hate each other.
Look, I said headcanon was allowed.
Okay.
Yeah. Look, the opposite of love isn't hate. The opposite of love is indifference. They love and hate are very close.
Sex is still sex.
But I mean, they fight together very well. It's like, it's the best designed of those fights, even, 12 years later, because their abilities are, you know, designed to complement each other. But yeah, no, just see what happens when you defeat Ornstein first, right? No respect. David, what does Maniad say?
Gonna go with Omid and Krista from the Walking Dead Telltale games. There was a fun dynamic in their relationship, and little bits of it got mentioned in later games.
They were very good. Yep. It was a good duo. Omi got done dirty. That was a terrible way to start season two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, poor Krista. Oh. Can't argue there. Hey, Dennis, what's Case say?
Case says, got to go with BJ and Anya from Wolfenstein.
It's a good one. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with this one.
Yeah, yeah. It's
that's
it's
from the newer ones, right?
Uh-huh, yeah. She's a Nazi hunting freedom fighter kind of person, and he's also a Nazi hunting freedom fighter kind of person. Yeah, it's sorry.
I thought you were gonna say, and she's a Nazi. Opposites attract.
No. That would be less cool. It's it's sold very well. I'm very sad that we're not gonna get another one of those, most likely.
Oh, really? What's that?
Oh, just it sales and stuff. Like, and yeah, it's shit. I wanted to see how that ended, where they were taking the fight back from America over to Europe. Yeah. Let's see here. And finally, Jeremy says, Joe Cancer, the couple from It Takes Two. Real answer, Bowser and Peach. We all know the truth. No, the couple in It Takes Two should never get together again. And their kid should be put in that Magneto cell. and studied for science to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Oh, Bowser and Peach after watching the Mario movie, like that is that rings so much more true. So fun to watch.
I'm going to just be a parody of myself and say Harry Dubois and Kim Katsurigi from Disco Elysium.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. No, it's it is a comic duo. It is a dramatic duo. If you are able to get Kim to respect you, it is the greatest feeling in video games. Yeah. Got to go with that.
I accidentally called him dad once.
Jala, how about you?
Jake and Sherry from Resident Evil 6.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Descendants of Freaks and Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
David, how about you?
So I don't know if it counts if part of what remakes the relationship so good is that it doesn't happen, but Zagreus and Dusa from Hades.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
Well, it can happen, but it's more of an asexual kind of thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, part of what makes it so cool is that they're like, that they both decide, like, oh, yeah, that's not what this is, but
yeah.
That's
still cool. I don't know if it could totally be canon because this game is rife with that. So I don't know if Dusa is ace or if she was just not interested.
It's definitely the community interprets it as her being ace. Like whether that was authorial intent, that is what it has become.
Okay. Yeah.
She definitely is enamored of him, but it is not a physical kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that twist so much when you got to the point. It stands either way.
Yeah. There needs to be more ace representation in games outside of Dusa and Psycho Mantis.
Yeah.
what's her name from Outer Worlds?
I don't know. I've not done
Outer Worlds. Your engineer from Outer Worlds is very explicitly ace, and that's like actually a super interesting plot point.
Yeah, neat.
But this is not video games, but my ship I will die on though is Poe and BB-8.
Oh yeah. Right? Okay. do you want to elaborate on that or
nope? No, I strongly disagree with the people that said it should have been him and Finn because mm-hmm. he already had the love of his life.
And how about you, Dennis?
So the other answer beyond Aloy and Erend would be the brothers from A Tale of Two Sons.
Oh, yeah.
You're literally playing as both of them. They're extensions of each other.
I've never even heard of that game.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, it's the one where you play each brother with the two sticks, solving puzzles.
Oh, okay, a twin stick platformer.
Yeah. Nice. Well, good question, Dennis. Thank you, everybody, for responding. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to facebook.com. You might have heard of it. And you can do a search for Duck Feet Community and watch for those prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
And now it's time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, and somebody in a WAF response called this the spring of Resident Evil. What's happening with RE2 and 3?
Shit done broke.
Yeah, that's weird. It's kind of like there was no reason for that to happen.
But it
did anyway.
Yeah, Capcom is trying to fix the ray tracing that just kind of disappeared at random. They're also theoretically going to be working to restore the 3D sound options in a future update that doesn't have like an actual date for it. Also, HDR is not working all the time and is causing stuff to crash.
Did somebody spill a pop on the server rack? Like what?
I mean, and you know, the thing is that I've heard from some friends, particularly Alex, aka Pickle Factory, that in Resident Evil 4 Remake, some of those options, graphical options, caused his game to crash a bunch. And I don't know if it was fixed in one of those recent patches. I have not talked to him since then. But so like all the Resident Evil games have graphic issues right now.
You wanted ray tracing? I thought you meant you wanted to know that our janitor, Ray Tracing, worked on the game.
Huh. Well, it's a weird name, but I'll allow it. a rare L for the RE engine. Yeah. Normally, that's like a real powerhouse.
Yeah.
Well, shit.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Somebody did something, and now it's all broken, but they're trying to fix it, theoretically. But anyway.
Dennis, what's happening over a media molecule if it still exists?
Yeah, I mean, it's so sad that Dreams just kind of never found its audience. One of the co-founders, Mark Healy, is headed for New Horizons. So, he announced it on Twitter. It's interesting. He used a lot of like pirate type references when talking about what he was going to do next. Yeah. And I was like, oh, maybe this dude has a pirate motif. And I scrolled back in his feed a while. I didn't see anything else, but, it's time for me to sail for, bluer skies, or a strong cosmic breeze is pulling me and my pirate heart is awakened. I'm going to start exploring the unknown. Yo ho ho in a bottle of rum. I'm off to pirate adventure. One that involves making games. That is,
it's kind of weird to turn your departure letter into an ARG.
Yeah, it's odd. So I'm hoping this guy is just like his thing is pirates. His picture at the end is him in like a skull and bones knit cap, and he has a skull and bones necklace, and so maybe that's just his thing.
And this wasn't on April 1st or on April 20th.
no, just shy. So another person, like Jake Solomon that I talked about a little bit, ago, that is, you know, was at the helm of a franchise that was just, you know, foundational in my love of games, headed off to do new things, which is sad, especially for the studio, and exciting to see where they go next.
Huh. Well. Yeah, well,
maybe not entirely surprising that he's going, given that his Twitter feed is like half like, so sad to see this person leave. So sad to see this person go. Oh, sad. Like, I loved working with so-and-so. Wish them the best. And this is like, okay, well, it's only a matter of time before you're doing your own.
Yeah, you're going to sell the equipment and split the proceeds. Yeah. Hey, David, what are those nerds at the Library of Congress up to?
Yeah, so they have added... they have added the Mario theme to the Library of Congress. So for their, I guess, collection of culturally relevant sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's the weirdest way to say that, wasn't it?
I mean, it is technically, it is accurate because not all of this is songs, but this is like audio recordings, you know? Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. There's just, you know, a little write up, which is kind of interesting, you know, talks about how the, sound was, partially a big player in proving that the, relatively simple sound system on an NES could still, you know, make compelling music.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just, I don't know, it's, you know, just kind of a cool thing.
It's in there, like, alongside some really cool stuff, like pretty important stuff, like, to, I don't know, have it thrown in alongside Imagine or Stairway to Heaven, like in this induction year, the very first recording of mariachi music, or Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot, or Daddy Yankee's Gasolina.
So I actually have another news story, though. It turns out that Nintendo has announced that they're suing the Library of Congress for a copyright infringement.
Yeah, they're gonna ruin their lives, like that one cracker guy, console cracker, Gary Bowser, which everybody loves making that pun when they make the news article, but they're ruining that man's life. He just got out of prison because they went after him. That sucks. Nintendo, get your shit together. Let's see here. Mine is gonna be real simple. I just learned the thing exists, and you know, I'm a sicko for this shit. The people who made Gas Station Simulator, they're working on a new game called Road Diner Simulator, where you open up a diner across the street from the gas station from Gas Station Simulator.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Is there going to be like a save carryover? So like if you did a particularly good job, the gas station across the street is like really nice.
Yeah, no, that's a thing.
Nice.
Yes, from the Destructor write-up, the idea is that Road Diner Simulator will read off your gas station simulator save and depict your progress on the opposite side of the road. There's been some indication that success in one game will attract more business in the other. But we only have indications that, yes, your gas station will be there.
Even Gas Station Simulator has the shared universe. It's unescapable.
See, I'm wondering, can you like undermine the opponent though? Because like if someone's going there for beef jerky, they're not going to your diner.
I think they can be complimentary. You know, even if they're not buying your jerky,
that's not how capitalism works.
Oh, true. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, but it'd be weird to try and sabotage yourself. Who are you, me? no gameplay shown, but they are using Unreal Engine 5, and I don't know, Gas Station Simulator is real fun. Like, it, you know, trust me, it is not just boring shit. Like, there's a reason to like these games. They're mechanically interesting. I say sweatily trying to justify my choices. Yeah, no idea on a release date, but looks pretty neat. Yeah, so I think that's everybody. How do you all feel about bunting it up?
Buttons.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 454. Jala, what's happening at Jala Chan's place?
Okay, well, the next episode, like I said, is on death positivity and includes some wild stories. It's worth a listen, and it's actually really funny. It'll be coming out the week after this episode comes out.
Nice. Over at jalachan.place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You pointed out that I got it wrong, and now I'm like, I'm in my head about it. I got the yips. I got the yips on saying that, on saying the name of your website and your show.
Jalachan.yips. Fuck!
If you want to help out this show, you know what you can do. Rate, subscribe, participate in the multiplayer over at the Duck Feet Community Facebook group. Tell your friends, Patreon. It is all good. Nothing special right now. I will say this again. If you came out to the Midwest Gaming Classic and we said hi, it was very nice to meet you. It's one of those things where, I don't know, we just kind of draw nice people in. It's really remarkable that people
faith
are cool.
And humanity restored.
I mean, let's not go that far. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me in the Deck of Wonders Discord.
I've been David Mysmith. You can find me on Twitter, but I don't know. I mean, really, Twitter?
And I'm Jolichon.
Are you government funded media?
You interrupted her. Come on.
I'm sorry, Jala.
I'm Jolichon in places, including Jolichon.place.
And stick around for some titles. Okay. I only have one. I have a real murderable name.
I have a murderable name as well. So
yeah, I got okay. that too.
I have that as well.
I've got two others though.
I've got a couple more.
Okay.
All right, you go first.
A regional Sephiroth. Who are you, me?
Yeah.
And then the last one, which I know is not going to be a thing, but it can be an A-toady, Jolichon.yips. Because that was very funny to me.
Say yip, yip.
I accidentally did a typo on yips, and that's very funny.
I had Assistant Sephiroth, which Assistant Regional Sephiroth would be amazing. And then I also had Who Are You, Me?
Okay.
So I had a real murderable name. Or got a real murderable name, and I had It's Good on the Steam Deck.
Okay. It's Good on the Steam Deck. By votes, it's a real murderable name.
Yeah.
I think it has to be.
It's great.
So I do have to ask, though, can you listen to the level on the Steam Deck?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. It has a web browser.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there.
Cool. Well, it is decided.